No, it's still fall here. But you don't have to go very far north, and you're getting snow and wintry weather. So I was talking to a guy today that he said one of our other coworkers was headed out hunting, and he said the guy was going to be passing through an area that's in like a full blizzard right now. So yeah, I mean, I can get to winter weather pretty easy. And I suppose if I go up in elevation, I'll probably see more winter-like weather. So for sure, it's here. It's coming. I'm seeing the occasional frost and stuff now, even down here. I think today was the coldest for this week, and then we're going to see warm weather, warmer than freezing weather. But still, I mean, you're not getting away with your t-shirt, your swim trunks, sandals. That stuff is gone. It's time to take that out of your kit.
Can hear me there now, Dave? Apparently my audio wasn't working at the first, but yeah, at least we didn't miss too much of it, and you were talking, so we're still good. So yeah, switching to winter weather, like Ben was saying there, it's... Hey, Matt, welcome to the show. It is one of those things where we do kind of switch gears a little bit. It's like you're in the mentality of warmer weather. At least I am. I was going through my kit here today, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna have to start switching over to some of the colder stuff. And then it got me thinking, well, what do we do? Like, I mean, there's the common things. Let's not beat around the bush here. There's a couple common things. Yeah, you're gonna wear warmer clothes, you're gonna get a heavier sleeping bag, you know what I mean? But there's some things that you don't really think about that become involved in going winter camping that sometimes you forget. I know with me, one of the big things that I usually forget is a ground sheet. You know what I mean? It's usually the second time out I remember the ground sheet. Not necessarily for the snow, but even now where it's a little colder, damper on the ground and stuff like that, I generally sleep in a hammock. I kind of switch to more of a closed-in shelter. I'm a little lower to the ground, trying to conserve that heat. And every single time, man, first time out, forget a ground sheet. Every single time. Don't ask me why. It's never in my mind that I need a ground sheet because for whatever reason, most of my sleep systems, I just either, sleep in the hammock or I'm going to be in a tent or whatever the case may be. So that was something I was thinking. I'm like, you know what? There's other things too that we kind of shift gears when we go into the colder weather that we kind of take for granted, or at least maybe it's just me. I thought it was worth talking about.
Oh, that's a good point. Sorry, something keeps popping up on my screen. I think I got it cleared. It definitely is time to consider some of that stuff. And, I'm always shifting my gear a little ways, one way or the other. And I mean, even if I don't get out, my gear is ready to go. And that's one of the things I've been looking at recently. Like, is it time to switch some things out? And what are some things I would like to start using again? So high up on my list, and it's not like your ground sheet, but high up my list is now I'm looking at my wood stove that I can take camping and my hot tent, or even considering the idea of how I can use it with a hammock. So there's hammock hot tents that are available. And I've got friends who've expressed an interest. Let's go camping and let's take the stove. So that's a possibility. But it's little things too, like thermal underwear.
Yeah. And you know what? Just even hunting, in all honesty, going out in the woods in general, don't have to be, staying overnight. Base layers. First couple times I went out, I totally forgot about base layers. I'm like, you know what? I got my pants. I put my long shirt on. First time, well, this shirt will be enough. Yeah, wandering around in the woods, first thing in the morning when there's frost everywhere, it gets a little chillier than you expect it to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this weekend we were in Costco, and I noticed at the time, I mean, this was, it was on sale. So I bought two pairs of long pants, two pairs of shirts, about half price at the time. And so, plus I've gained a couple of pounds, and I put on some winter insulation, and naturally, but I bought some extra stuff just in case, and I had to buy the right size for that. So it's good to have that. So having that, good thermal underwear to start. Even your footwear. Really take a look at your footwear, because what's really good for some people. Now, I can get away with winter boots year round. Like, don't get me, my feet don't really sweat. Or at least that's the way I feel. People who are smelling my shoes might have a different story. But, the light shoes, the ones that breathe really well, are not what you necessarily need in the winter. Something that's got a bit more insulation, a bit more thickness, and are a bit more impervious to moisture starts to become a bigger thing to consider, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I'm kind of the other way in this. I wear, like, my work boots all year. That's my outdoors boots. I like them because they got good ankle support. They got steel toes on them, which there is an argument if steel toes are good in the wood or not. And honestly, my argument to that is, are you going uphill or walking in the flat? You know what I mean? Topic for a different day. But anyway, the big thing is, because they have steel shank and steel toes, they make your feet cold really fast. You know what I mean? That stuff gets cold and it holds the cold against you. And I find I get cold feet really quick before I think, oh yeah, it's getting colder outside. I got to switch up my footwear, or at least put some more thermal layering or something in there. So not only do you need to worry about, you know, your winter boots and stuff like that, but if you're like me and you tend to wear work boots all the time, keeping in mind if they're stealing those, now you're starting to bring other things in the equation. I mean, you can take this as far as you want to, like necklaces. I have taken off one of my chains because it is a larger one and it holds a lot of cold. And I used to get little bits of frostbite around my neck where it would sit and I wouldn't notice it. Wedding rings. I've heard of people, not myself, I usually wear gloves, but when I worked in the woods piling pulp, I have seen people actually get frostbite around their wedding rings and stuff like that too, right? So not that you necessarily have to take them off and drill them in the woods. That's not what I'm saying. But you got to be more aware of it. Take a little bit more time. Be observant. Check things like that. So for me, with my wedding ring, a lot of times if I know I'm not wearing my gloves and stuff, you'll see I'll take my hand, I just put it over that finger if I'm just sitting stationary. I don't necessarily notice that I'm cold there, but it's just a habit I've gotten into. And these are the gears that we got to shift into coming into colder weather. So Steve joined us in the comments here. He's saying ground insulation definitely comes to the top of his mind. And we already talked about that. Kind of goes hand in hand with the ground tarp. You're going to have to keep yourself drier and warmer simply because in the winter, I know, eye roll, groan here, being damp is way worse for you than during the summer. You know, if you sweat, you die. It's not only if you sweat, if you get wet in any way, shape, or form, it's way harder to build that heat back. Even if you can get the wet clothes off and away from you, you still got to build that heat back up. And now you're talking about more calories to warm up your body, and you got to put more effort into making the fire, and you got to, you know, there's more effort into if something goes wrong. You got to be much more observant and cautious when winter rolls around as well.
No, for sure. I read one time, if you fall into freezing water and you drop your temperature 2 to 3 degrees, that gaining that energy back, like recovering that temperature in the cold, is similar to running a small marathon. Like, it takes a lot of energy. It's much easier to maintain your temperature than to regain it. So if you've dropped body temperature, it's harder. And if you're struggling because you have damp clothes and your body's trying to basically dry that off, you know, it's wasting heat, evaporating that moisture, then that's energy you have to gain back somehow. Whether it's by burning body fat or sugars that you've consumed or whatever method, that's gone. And you can only do it so fast. You can only metabolize so much energy. So if you beat that reaction, then you're in a downward spiral, and that's when you start losing body temperature. So no matter how much insulation you might have, we're only designed to handle so much cold.
And here's something that a lot of people miss for when it says to keeping your body warm. A lot of people tend to bundle their heads and their cores and stuff like that, and they leave their arms and stuff exposed. Keeping in mind, anywhere where your skin is thin and you get a lot of like veiny or artery tissue coming out, those are the points where it actually, like, don't get me wrong, it's beneficial to keep your core warm. I'm not saying nothing about that, but keep in mind any of these thin areas, keep a little more extra clothing on them too. It's really easy to get cold into your core and have a whole bunch of stuff covering you and not know why, simply because, you know, your head's exposed, your neck's exposed, your inner arms are exposed, you don't got the proper insulation on your legs, like inside your inner thighs and behind your legs and at the back of your knees. These are all thin skin spots that they can literally seep a lot of heat and stuff. Once again, during the summer, you don't think about it. You want all that stuff exposed so you can expel that excess heat. And now you got to try and retain that heat. So you got to kind of flip the switch to say, okay, I don't want to keep these places cool. I need to keep them warmer. Now, taking into mind as you add padding on, you're going to potentially reduce mobility and things like that too. So once again, plays back to safety. You got to be more observant as well with that. Yeah, I had a point and it's kind of sitting right here in the lobe. Give me a minute and I'll come back to it.
Okay, so let's just throw out there. So you're talking about covering your extremities, and you know, hands are a huge one. I seen a great video a little while ago. I think the guy's name goes by the name Coach. He's a through hiker or salesperson in the States, but he talked about layering with your glove wear. So I don't want to go with what he was suggesting. He actually suggested a few gloves, but I've gone to the dollar store and bought the one size fits all thin cotton gloves.
Yep.
I buy those, put on my hands, and then I'll put a thicker, heavier glove on. That's what I do on my motorcycle. I use the same gloves almost year round, but as the weather gets colder, I'll put a thin pair of gloves underneath it, and that insulates, that gives me that extra layer. And it makes a big difference. As the weather gets colder, upping the insulation value of my riding gear. But the same thing for the rest of the year. Like, if you have, I mean, it can be annoying if you're trying to do detailed work, taking off multiple pairs of gloves. If you have a couple of layers, it really does give you the ability to really control the temperature everywhere. So you can do layering even on your hands. Same thing with your hat. You can actually wear a couple of, you know, maybe just a even a bandana or something like that, like a buff right over your head, and then put a cap over the top of that. It does help, that extra piece of, and you can pull it down around your neck as a scarf.
Oh, a big one I'm big for, or one I'm big for, sorry, is I'll put a stocking cap on or a toque, whatever you want to call it. And then a lot of my jackets, like especially my hunting jacket and stuff like that, has a hood, and I'll flip that up just because it stops the wind. You can cut down on some bulk, and I'm not saying all bulk, but a good shortcut, quote unquote, is what I'll call it, is if you can block a lot of the wind from cutting through your stuff, you don't necessarily need as much insulation. Don't get me wrong, having something that's just completely windproof is not the same as having good insulation, but you can theoretically cut back on some of the thickness by getting a good wind block, because wind will cut through most of that, and of course, it's expelling the heat. So, coming back to the motorcycle gloves, I know people that will wear like just the old latex or non-latex rubber gloves, either inside or outside their gloves, depending. Like inside their gloves during the hotter months, that way if it rains or something, their hands stay relatively dry. Outside their gloves in the colder months, because it blocks a lot of the wind and it doesn't cut into their hands as bad. You know what I mean? They still may need to layer up and get a little thicker pair of gloves, but they don't have to go quite as thick when they can cut back on some of that wind. It just makes a wind block, if that makes any kind of sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And we do, you think about your shelter. A big part of your shelter oftentimes is simply to block the wind and slow the airflow away.
Yeah, and that's the thing. By getting that layer, you also trap some of that air next to you. Keep that in mind as well. But that works for and potentially against you, depending on how hard you're working. Trapping that air next to you equals another layer of insulation, thermal insulation, I mean. But if you get it warm and you're working hard, it also traps moisture against you too. So keep that in mind as well. Changing gears slightly, I remember the point I was going to try and make earlier. You got to keep in mind, even your gear is going to switch a little bit. Sometimes the backpack that you've been using all summer may now need to be switched out for something for the winter, or at least adjusted to accommodate the extra bulk that you're going to be wearing around there. You don't want to keep everything the same. Get out there and find out that the bag is not sitting right on your hips or it's cutting into you and stuff like that. This is a good time of year. Throw on your winter coat and stuff. Start readjusting your straps a little bit just so you have a baseline before you do get out there in the woods. I mean, it's something super simple. It's going to save you a little bit of annoyance down the road.
100%.
Another one I thought of along those same lines, for me anyway, is you'll notice I'm starting to take. I've taken the Sawyer Minis out of some off my kits. I'm not going to leave them like in the four-wheeler or anything like that right now. I'll probably pack them just in my bag as I travel. But these things here, my water purification methods, I got to rethink about those during the winter because these do hold moisture inside. If I was using it and it got cold and it froze, it's going to basically break down all those little tubes and stuff inside and it's going to render it pretty much useless. You know what I mean? Because now they're not going to be filtering anything. It's just going to be pouring over them, and you're just going to be getting the straight river water, whatever you happen to be drinking. So depending on your water filtration systems, your other gear, maybe even your cook systems, depending on what you're using, I don't know, you may have to reapproach those and repack them for the colder months. For me, I'm going to probably move away from my alcohol stove. It just doesn't work that great in the colder months. Like, you have to prime it. You're using a lot more alcohol. It's just not going to be as effective. I'm probably going to move on to, like, my... I'll probably keep the butane stove for now. But once again, that can still be affected by thermal regulation.
I'm definitely going with that. I mean, that's the reason I bought my MSR Universal Style Whisper Light, is I wanted something that ran as good in the summer as it does in the winter. And honestly, it's basically not affected by temperature, because pressure pushes, like, you pump the pressure in, so it's what air pressure is when you pump it in, and it goes through a tube and it gets heated up, and that gasifies it and it comes out the vents. So it runs pretty well as efficiently summer or winter. So that's my go-to. In the summer, it sits with my bike. It's part of my bike gear. But in the winter, the plan is for it to go year-round, you know, like everywhere. It goes with all my kit. Because I've used the butane ones, and I have had them struggle to make a pot of boiling water. Think about it. Even on a nice summer day, sometimes boiling water, they'll turn frosty.
Oh, yeah. Propane's another big one like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Steve saying over here, you can generally drop the bug spray. You know what? That is something you can pull out of the pack. Now it may be time to start putting in a couple of these suckers. You know what I mean? Hand warmers. I just went through all my bags and added in at least two sets of hand warmers. And these suckers work great too. You know what I mean? I don't mind the chemical ones where you break them and they'll kind of turn to that solid mass and they'll stay warm for so long, and then you can reboil them, reuse them. They're not bad, but I find you can't beat these suckers. You know what I mean? For the cost of them, for what they do, they get nice and warm. As long as they're exposed to air, it's basically a thermal reaction with iron oxide in there, and it emits heat. So they tend to get up like 50 degrees Celsius. You know what I mean? They're pretty warm. I won't give Lily a set of them on her own. I always check them. You know what I mean? Or you can get those gloves, which add a little bit of thickness to them, where you can slip the packs inside so they're not touching bare skin. Simply because I worry they could get hot enough they might accidentally hurt her. Not like burn, blister, and stuff like that, but they could definitely affect the skin over a long period of time.
So if you're looking for that type of glove, this one doesn't have head. We've been buying them from Walmart. The coldest winter one has a zipper in the back, and you can put it in there, and it does help. It does exactly what you just suggested. So that's a brand name I'm familiar with that has that pouch. Is there a better one out there? Quite possibly. It's just one I'm familiar with.
I think I found the ones for her at Value Village. So,
Yeah, the problem with those is it's hard to always get the same ones from Value Village.
Yeah, but at the same time, my two cents on this was, she's a growing girl, and the gloves that I just bought her this month probably are not going to fit her in 2 months. I'll be gut for a new pair. So I'm just flipping through them quickly.
Yeah, just, all I'm saying is that if you have a brand, you can at least look for that in Value Village or anywhere else.
Exactly. No, 100%. I completely agree.
It's probably a zippered pouch that goes in underneath. And it should go basically underneath the insulation so that the heat's trapped inside the glove, but it keeps a layer between you and your hand. And like I said, it also stifles that. The other thing, I mean, we can talk a bit about that. I love the hand warmers, the chemical ones that like you're describing that you have. I have a pouch full of them, and I have the full-size body ones that are too big to fit in your gloves or your feet. You can get feet ones. And the body ones you can throw inside your jacket, right against your chest, or across, like, I find the smaller your back, near your, where I guess your kidneys are supposed to be, really can make a huge difference.
I love how you said where they're supposed to be. Like, mine aren't there, but regular people's might be.
Did you ever, this is off topic, and I really, You heard of the Mandela effect, right?
Yep.
There is a conspiracy out there that we're half of the people remember people saying kidneys were in one location and now they're not, they're in another location. There's also saying that the heart, we were always told the heart was to the left to the center, and now they're saying it's much closer to the very center.
Yeah, I do remember that one, honestly, but I think it was, yeah, I don't know. Haven't heard the kidney one. I do remember the heart one. Everybody always used to say the heart was over here, and now it's much more like, it's basically your fist on the center moved over to the end of your hand, basically touching your sternum.
Yeah. So, anyways, whether you believe the Mandela effect or not, there is things that people can bring up that I clearly remember one way, and then people prove to me that it was never that way. The Disney thing where the princess comes in, or the and she clicks it, and it apparently never happened.
It was the... I know exactly what you're talking about. I can still envision it in my head.
Never happened. Not real.
No way. I thought it was Tinkerbell kind of fluttered in and hit the top part of the... Okay, yeah, we're way down a different rabbit hole here. Sorry, people. This is a conversation for another time. But anyway, no, man. I always thought it was Tinkerbell. She came out. She touched the very top tower of the Disney Palace, and then it would sprinkle down or some nonsense.
Yeah, no. This is another podcast we may start later. Conspiracies with Ben Rob. We believe none of them, but we'll talk about anything. Keep an eye out for that coming to a podcast near you soon.
Oh, no. I am so a part of the whole Mandela effect. I find it super, super cool. Shazam is the one that I get. I can remember the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I can describe parts of it, and they're like, yeah, it never happened. And I'm like, no, dude, I can basically describe the movie start to finish.
The pirate one with Sinbad?
Yeah, that never happened, where he was supposed never to be a genie.
No, not real.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, we're way off left field here. Getting back onto topic a little bit here. This Things is a topic Rob, for
remember, that never
the
happened.
Digital... Digital Campfire. We were talking about this last episode. If anybody didn't see it then, we've been talking about this. And once again, I'm going to pitch this out there because it's a great time to include it. If anybody is interested, we've always wanted to do a podcast where we take some of you folks that are listening, bring on the show with us, and just basically have an open discussion on whatever. You know what I mean? And we always want to call it the Digital Campfire. And we talked about this way back when we started the podcast, and we were going to bring on a couple of the other fellows like Jeremy and Gary and people like them. Honestly, it was just trying to coordinate us all together in one spot. It just never really happened. And now the idea kind of came back up, and I'm still 100% on board for this. It'll probably be separate from a regular podcast. We'll probably put it as an adult audience. We're going to take some of the filters off and have some fun with it. Or at least that's the way I envision it. So if anybody's interested in something like that, wants to be a part of it, by all means, please get in touch with us. I mean, you can see our social media down here along the bottom. For those of you that are listening to the podcast, not here on YouTube, just go to AtlanticBushcraft.ca. You'll find all the contact methods for us. Reach out to us. We would love to do this idea.
So, back to my point, before I wandered off and you just...
I followed, yep, hook, line, and sinker.
Followed me down the paths and need both... The body warmers, I find them great in a sleeping bag. And so what I'll often do is I'll crack one open before I go to bed, get it warm, and toss it at the foot of my sleeping bag. Now, what you're going to find is that it will go all night. In fact, it'll probably not even produce heat for parts of the night. And you may have to take it out and shake it in the air and throw it back in underneath. But it will keep you warm, and it'll warm up your sleeping bag, and it's a really good help. And I believe in it so much that a little while ago, I was driving by a Walmart. We were going in anyways, and there's a guy in a tent in front of Walmart. Don't ask. And he had a sign out, getting cold at night, anything helps. And I don't necessarily give money to people. But I went into Walmart, and I honestly looked for these body packs. And if I could have found like a 50 pack, I was going to buy it, whatever it cost, and give him half, at least half. Because that's That would get you through close to a month of cold nights.
Oh, for sure.
Right? And I find it works really well. Anyways, I didn't find any. I wasn't able to give them. I'm not a hero. To anyone who thinks I am, I'm not. I'm a failure. But I have here, I could get it in a second, right here. I have a container of nothing but those kind of body warmers and hand warmers and foot warmers. It's a ammo can thing full, just stocked full with them. And before I go for a trip, like you said, I throw a couple in my first aid kit, a couple in the pack, some in my sleeping set. And so everywhere I go, I probably have enough to get me and a couple of other people through the planned trip with maybe an extra one or two. And it really helps because you never know what happens if someone ends up with his gear doesn't work the way you explained. Something gets lost, that can really make the difference between making it out and not. That extra bit of warmth can keep you from getting frostburn. So if you start to get really cold hands or something gets really cold, you warm that up and put it on your body before you get frostburn. If you get frostburn, now you have a whole new utter slew of problems. But before when it's feeling cold, put it on and you warm it up and you save that from freezing potentially. So that's a huge. Instant heat. It's also really good for injuries if you need that heat. They don't really recommend cold now for injuries, do they?
There's a whole thing to that, Ben. That's a whole other topic, be honest with you. There's for people that are cold, there's a very specific method in rewarming them back up.
No, I'm talking about like if you sprain an ankle or something. It used to be ice.
Oh, rice, yeah, rest, ice, and elevation.
Yeah, and now I don't think they do that. I think they've taken the ice out and now you can go right to a heat pack.
Yeah, well, it depends. Strains or sprains, right? One is heat, one is cold. Rice was generally always with a sprain. It was, rest, ice, compress, and elevate. Strain was something else, and it involved heat. Now it's the general, because if you put ice on a strain, you potentially make stuff worse. Yeah, the whole other thing with that. But so what ice does, or what ice is really good for, and what it's not used enough for, is bleeding wounds. Because it restricts arteries and stuff like that, right? So it'll stop bleeding. So if you got something that's bleeding and it you can't get it to stop, use a little ice or cold compress or something like that, and it'll generally, tighten up all the artery, I'm saying arteries, but I don't think I'm capillaries. That's the one I'm looking for. It'll tighten up all the capillaries to the point where you'll actually be able to get a little coagulation and stuff there going. But as for a sprain, it's I don't know what to tell you, honestly, Ben. In the right hands, it works great. In the wrong hands, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, they say you still use ice. I just looked it up, and I know there's some controversy on this again, every now and then, what they say, but you can ice something that's swelling and stuff like that.
Oh, buddy, you're not on the comments, are you?
No.
Yeah. Steve's praising your hair again, and it's great. So, jumping slightly back on topic here, Dave, Real Big Monkey One joining us in the comments. Summer, I carry a machete and a folding saw. Winter, I carry an axe and a folding bone saw. So yeah, sometimes your tools are going to take a bigger difference in changing. I mean, I'm all for the axe too, because you may need that to get into a water source or something like that. You know what I mean? I'm way more apt to bring some sort of axe in the colder months than I am during the summer months. Summer months, I generally try to get away with a saw, much like you. I also try to get away with my machete. It kind of does double duty for me. Everything that I can generally do with an axe, I can do with a machete, except cut a decent hole in ice. I mean, if I pounded on it long enough, I'm sure I could, but it's not going to be as effective as a good little axe or a little machete. You know what I mean?
You're definitely in the winter, you're processing more and bigger wood.
Yeah.
Because I'll burn a larger log in the winter because I want it to last the night and I can handle that much heat. In the summer, I keep my fire small and contained. In the winter, I get them mid-size and contained. I don't make big fires when I'm camping. It's too much wood, too much energy. But I will burn larger chunks because I do need it to last longer. And so I may not process down as much, but I'm processing bigger pieces so that I can get there. So yeah, I up my axe size. I still tend to take an axe over a machete. But I have lighter weight axes I will use in the summer. My little Fisker, which is a hollow bladed, not full head axe that I find is really convenient and got a nice little plastic case on it. In the winter, I have either a small woodsman's axe or almost like a Boy Scout style axe. I'm trying to think, 20-inch handle on it, 24-inch handle.
Yeah,
That
that'd be about
range,
right.
right? Something that's more compact, but still carryable. Generally, you'll have to go on the outside of my pack, but still is packable. Yeah, for sure. Bosa's, at my Agua Cannon has been a pretty well a go for me. I have two sizes. There is three sizes available. I do not have the biggest size, but I have the smaller size and a medium size, and I absolutely love them. In the winter, I would most likely take the bigger size for the very same reason. I can process bigger wood with the bigger saw.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I know what you mean. So yeah, so you mentioned ground sheets. I'm trying to go through what we've covered. The only other thing is your sleeping pad. If you're using a sleeping pad, you'll want an insulated one instead of an uninsulated one.
Oh no, this was me diving down a rabbit hole about the Mandela effect. You can come back to that later, Ben. You know me, I started on the rabbit hole hard.
Sort of what I've done to you. I don't think I realized you were into that.
Oh man, I've written a paper on the Mandela effect. Not a well-published paper or anything, but when I was in school, I did a whole paper on the Mandela effect. Love it. Anyway, like I said, that's a time for some wobbly pops and another conversation.
So yeah, so I mean, I have insulated pads. I also have insulated pads and under quilts for my hammock. And the other thing is sometimes I'll throw a windscreen protector, those little bubbled ones
Yep.
that you put in a windscreen. I'll take that and throw under my sleeping system. My sleeping bag switches out. I no longer take my summer sleeping bag. I take my winter sleeping bags. If anyone is looking for a good winter sleeping bag, I highly recommend keeping an eye on sales. I picked one up this year from REI, for a quarter of its normal price.
Nice. Yeah, you and I were talking about that before last week's show, I believe. Just a couple comments. Once again, coming from here, because I try to bring everybody's comments up. So those of you that are wondering if you should join us live, you absolutely should. I'll try and read your comments off. So Dave, I love my Agua Boreal 24. So there, now you have Ben's endorsement and Dave's endorsement. It's a good saw. Steve, considering you've discussed vehicle EDC gear, also switching the vehicle gear, there's some changes to be made, and you're absolutely right. Once again, I usually store a lot of water in my vehicles and stuff like that. That way, if something happens, I have some drinking water there. Probably going to move away from the water a little bit because I don't want to freeze and burst in the car. But I'm going to put something in there. More than likely, what I'll probably put in is some like electrolyte supplement packets or something like that, and hopefully have the know-how to bring a little water with me. Or I do have a couple of these that are I know are 100% dried out. And I start using them as emergency gear now. So I have one of these in the package that's still going to be in my truck. You know what I mean? So trust me, if I break down and I'm thirsty, I'm banging some holes in some ice and I will use this thing. And once I'm done with it, I'll just shove it inside my coat or something and keep it next to my body heat to try and keep it from freezing and stuff like that. But I'm not going to openly put bottles of water under my seat in case they freeze and burst. And now I basically have a mini pool in the back of my truck.
I mean, honestly, a good stove. Carrying something that can boil water in, because in the winter, generally snow and ice is something you can get plenty of. Boil it, you're going to kill most bacteria, most dangerous things, and you don't have to worry about it freezing. So that same stove that we talked about, you know, the liquid fuel stoves that work pretty well year round, probably a really good solution for that. It wouldn't take that long, and if it's in your vehicle, you can use the fuel out of your vehicle if you have to. So options are available. Probably something else. Increase your fire starting kit. Finding good tinder in the winter can be a little bit more of a struggle. And making sure you have solid way of making flame.
Just gonna say, because I know Dave's on here and this has been the running gag, the tactical bands say they're good fire starters, aka the Ranger bands, aka Kaiser knocking off something we used to do from scrap stuff from the junkyard. Nothing against Kaiser. I mean, they seen a market, they marketed on it. I'm disappointed I didn't do it first. It's just funny.
I've always kept, I don't think there's one in my vehicle right now, but I've always kept, it probably is, a large candle in my car.
Yeah. No, I was just sitting here. That's what I was, you seen my head jerking around. I'm like, where are my candles? I just dug a box of them out and I gotta go put some in the vehicles. One candle goes a long way in a vehicle. If something happens and you break down and you need to stay warm, if you close your windows, crack one a little bit, you do need some fresh air, folks, and you light a candle, you can stay non-dead. I'm not gonna say you can stay warm. You can keep yourself alive.
You're not going to strip down to your underwear and complain it's hot. That's
No.
not a risk. But you won't freeze to death. And so one candle makes that kind of a difference. And I've experimented with this. Over the years, I have had plenty of time where I hung out in a car for long periods of time in the winter, and I tried to see what made sure to keep us warm. And one or two candles. And what I often did at this time was I always had the candles that were in a glass jar
Yep.
because it contained the wax. You don't want wax all over your interior and stuff. And if you're in the front seats, you put it sort of on, in the back seat or whatever, so you don't worry about hitting it or bumping. If you're in the back seat, because that's the most comfortable place, shove your front seats up and down as far as you can, and you can even put them on the floor and just make sure you're up on the seat. Sort of keep a good blanket in your vehicle too, something to wrap yourself up, cover yourself up in, and it makes a huge difference. You can easily get through the night with a good blanket and a candle in a car, and you'll have a little bit of light, so it's not dark, it's not as spooky, if that's the right word for it. It
It's
makes it a
comforting.
much
It's the
more
same thing
bearable
as a fire,
experience.
right? Like a campfire.
Yeah.
I don't know how far people want to go into this, but if you're looking for something that's real interesting, and I know you know what I'm talking about here, Ben, a terracotta heater.
Yeah.
And you can usually buy most of the stuff from one of the dollar stores. And I mean, if you want to get real crafty about one, a terracotta heater goes a long way, and they're dirt cheap to make. If anybody's wondering what a terracotta heater is, basically just Google it, terracotta heater. It's a couple terracotta plant pots with tea light candles. And they actually make a significant amount of heat.
You know what actually does a decent job?
Yeah.
But you can get the three candle one, and because it has that hot plate up top, that this metal plate, it heats up and radiates the heat of it more. It does seem to work. I don't know why. So one of these, but get the three candle one. It'll pretty well sit. You can cook on it. You can boil water on top of it, apparently. I haven't done it. I don't have one, but I know people who have them. I've watched videos on it. So this would be a good survival kit to add one of these or get the three one. You can hang it inside the car. It'll give you enough light to get through the night, and it'll last all night. It'll go 8 hours burning.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you and I can attest to this. We used one while we were out camping in the hammocks, burnt it all night. I know Steve's in the comments here. I lit mine up and we let it run all night in a cabin we were staying in, and we made it the entire night, and I blew it out in the morning.
Yeah, no, I think they're absolutely awesome. They're a great item. I've got three of them now, I think. I found a couple on sale. Well, actually, no. I found a 2.0 version. I bought it because I wanted it. And then I went down in one of the stores and I seen it on sale on clearance in the store, the full kit, like all the parts, like the reflector, the little condom type thing, you name it. It's all there. And I bought it. So I think I got it for like $25 or something. Awesome deal.
So Dave just saying here, Morse, and I can never say their name, but
Morse is fancy.
thank you. Has an incredible video on using a candle in a cut off 2 liter pop bottle. for heat.
Oh,
So,
yeah?
and we have their book. Steve was nice enough to give us a copy of that, and yeah, no, it's good to have. You know what I mean? Good book. Read it. If you are looking for light reading, folks, it's a little heavier in light reading, but good reading.
One of the things that I've heard and I've seen done too is a thing of fat, like shortening or lard,
Yep.
like the 1 gallon thing. You put a wick into that and light it. It will run for like a ridiculous amount of time. Like I think it's like 100+ hours or
I was
something.
gonna say, I know a tub of Crisco with a wick run through it runs almost 200 hours.
Yeah, it's exactly it. Like, so I'm not gonna suggest that's a good survival kit in your car because honestly, it might attract some animals. But just one of those things, you know, like that solid or semi-solid fuel that burns at a very controlled rate, can really make a lot of difference. Yeah, so we covered a lot. I mean, we could
Yeah,
go
that's
on
all this
for.
episode was about, was to get people thinking. Remember, cold weather's coming up. Think about it.
Two things that you don't take out of your kit, or in fact, you're more likely to put in the winter, but you're less likely to think about it. Chapstick
Yep.
and sunscreen.
Sunglasses at the very least. Most times I'm covered over, and I have my wide brim hat, which I still wear in the winter as well. But sunglasses, I wear my sunglasses significantly more in the winter than I do in the summer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, think about it. In the summer, the sun is hitting green leaves, brown woods. Maybe when you're canoeing, it's probably about the same. But in the winter, it's white snow, and it ref white snow reflects like 99% of the light. And so you're getting all the sun coming down, plus everything reflecting back at you. You're getting probably twice the light in your eyes and onto your skin. Now, much less of the skin is exposed, and you get fewer hours of it. But the hours you are out there, you snow blindness is a real thing, is a very big possibility and should be avoided at all costs.
I've had where it's been like felt like sand in my eyes. You know what I mean? Never actually gotten to the point where I couldn't open my eyes, couldn't see properly, but I've had that like sandy feeling in my eyes from just being out in the woods, and starting to get that. And it basically it's the same as a welding flash, you know what I mean? You're burning the I think it's you're burning your retinas ever so slightly and it's gonna heal. So yeah, sunglasses. Wear them a ton in the winter. And it doesn't have to be a great pair of sunglasses. You don't have to have Oakleys or Ray-Bans or whatever you want to call them. The sunglasses I buy, I get from Princess Auto by the case. Because Lily, when
Yeah.
she was younger, had a habit of destroying all of them. So I literally found the first $5 pair of sunglasses I could find and bought them in a case. Well, I guess they were safety glasses, but they were tinted safety glasses, which I called sunglasses. Flashburn sucks. Yeah, so Matt knows what I'm talking about. It's the same thing. Snow blindness is basically the same as a welding flash. It makes your eyes start to feel like they're right sandy, you get grit in them, and you're always rubbing them. They just burn.
Yeah, no, it's rough. I've never had it. We could do an episode on things you can do for that. But if you can't get sunglasses, just they used to take like a piece of birch bark, cut a couple of thin slits. It's so you don't see so much light can't hit your
Yeah, you're
eyes.
just limiting the light into your eyes. Also, it's good for your eyes to some degree. It causes you to focus in. You're way less likely to get eye problems. Or if you do have mild eye problems, it'll actually help it a little bit.
Yeah, it does affect your range. You have to use your head more to
Yeah,
properly
your
focus.
peripheral is going to be shot and your depth perception could potentially get a little skewed as well. Because you're not seeing full image, you know what I mean? You're not taking in as much sensory information as you require to make those kind of calls. Keep that in mind. But you know what? It's better to be a little more careful, walk a little slower, and not go blind at the end of the day, if that's all you have.
So, big things. Let's make sure we hit the big things. Warmer clothes and equipment, kind of a must. Artificial means of heating yourself, which is your fire, your thermal pads, things like that, like your hand warmers. Take care of your eyes and your skin because additional light, plus Windburn and stuff like that. More firewood, so, you know, gear to process and handle that stuff, and ability to get that stuff started. Make sure you have gear that will work in the winter. So we said, like, stoves and stuff like that, that can handle cold temperatures and not act, be less efficient. And anyone ever doubts me, take a propane stove, run it till you can't run it anymore, and then wait till the summer and you'll find out you still have half a tank there. Right?
Like, well, I mean, I'm trying to think. A prime example is carbon dioxide. I'm just thinking from a paintball side effect. CO2 in 0 degrees Celsius barely works, you know what I mean? It'll actually start coming out in a liquid. It won't expand. We used to run into that all the time. We used to take these little heater packs and a wool sock. You crank one of these open, get it going. You put a wool sock over the air tank and stuff this in to try and keep enough heat to it so that you can play a little bit. Don't recommend people do that either, because you shouldn't heat a pressurized cylinder. But we're young and dumb.
Yeah, for sure. What else? Yes, so I think that covers a lot of it. The other thing is light. It's going to get darker earlier, and it's going to stay dark later. So you're going to want to look at making sure you have a source of light that's going to work for you. You know, 4:30 right now, according to my watch, the sun was setting here, and it's not rising until after 7 o'clock. I'm a 7:30. Mm-hmm. So that means you have well over 12 hours, you know, what, 14 hours ballpark of dark. You're going to use up batteries and stuff, so make sure you have a flashlight that's going to last and going to work in that cold weather. And you have ability to recharge that if you need to.
And like Steve said here in the comments, batteries die much quicker in cold weather. Keeping that in mind for your flashlight, cell phones, and stuff like that. You may need to bring some more battery packs. You may need to keep those close to your body so they don't die from the cold leaching. So Matt Wolseley here is asking a question. That MSR stove, will it burn a lot of different fuel, just a tank you pump up for with a fuel line? Yeah, so the MSR that Ben's talking about, and he'll clarify a little bit more for you, it's a multi-fuel use stove. And it's good for a lot of stuff there, Ben. Can you remember everything it's good for? I know it's like gasoline, diesel, white gas, naphtha.
Okay, so I don't have the stove here, but I have the box it came in. It runs white gas, gasoline, kerosene, Napa, whatever, all those, basically almost any liquid fuel. It doesn't run alcohol, although I think I've read people have modified it to run on alcohol. So look around for it. It's recommended here, white gas, kerosene, unleaded auto fuel. I know it'll also run diesel.
And what have you run through it so far, Ben?
White gas and gasoline.
How do you find gasoline through that? Going slightly off topic now, but how do you find the gasoline through that?
It's a little dirtier, but it's probably worth it, because basically I think it's a liter or liter and a half bottle cost me like $25, where I can get a liter of gasoline for under two. So it's 10% the cost. So, I mean, it has the shaker thing. You can shake to clean the jets, and there's the tools to go with it. So the big thing for me was winter camping. I still have some of the Napa, their recommended fuel. And I'll probably continue burning that while I have it. But no, once I burn through that, I'm not sure I will buy more of it. Kerosene and diesel are similar weight, so you should be able to burn either of those. And they will burn dirtier, and I think you need to switch the nozzles for those. But yeah, you know, I have it because that's why I wanted it. I wanted something that I could use in that cold weather. Because I have been out there when you couldn't get the right ones, you know, like when the butane ones failed and when other ones just wouldn't light. My alcohol stove struggled. It really did. Like I had to really prime it. The alcohol burned, yes, but the stove cooled down and it didn't get as much burn per ounce.
Well, I think we chatted pretty much on this topic for tonight. I can't think of anything else I want to finish up on this. This actually took a little longer than I thought. We're coming up on our 50 minutes. Let's see. Which version is that? Is that that's the Whisper Light Universal?
International,
Whisper Light International.
universal.
So yeah, Matt, if you're looking for something like that, MSR makes a few different stoves. That's the Whisper Light International. I knew it had a specific one. I think they make a 360 Expedition that takes the multi-fuel as well. Did that come with the naphtha canister with it, like the red canister? Do you have to buy that separate? Because I do know they make a kit in there. One has it, one doesn't as well.
No, I had to buy the tank separate. And I do plan on buying some extra ones. I got a buddy who did a pretty good expedition. I got to reach out to him soon. I think he'll be back in the area. And I checked out his kit, and he had modified his motorcycle so he could take fuel right out of his tank to fill up his. And he carried an extra couple so he could pour them back in if he needed it for either or. So that's one of the huge advantages of using gasoline too, is you not so great in your car because what's 1 liter of fuel really going to do for you? But really good on a motorcycle because 1 liter of fuel means probably 30, 40
I was going to
kilometers.
say 30, 40 kilometers is what that means.
Yeah. But it's what, 5 kilometers in your car?
If that, my truck might start it. Anyway, that's as good a spot as any to end it here tonight. Once again, leaving you folks with another thought, and I keep coming back to it, the digital campfire. Steve, Danny joins us there too. Matt, Nomad, you guys are all invited. You're all here in the comments. Get in contact
Hey.
with us. Let's make this happen. First topic's going to be the Mandela effect. I think it's going to be great. That's it for me. As always, get out there, have fun, folks. This episode was nothing more than to get the creative juices flowing again and make you think about checking your kit. We don't want anyone to get out there and realize, you still got all your summer stuff, and yet you are in minus degree weather. So check it out. Make sure it's all good. And we'll catch us next week, folks.
Test your gear before you go for the night.
Night off.
Wow.